Chapter 16. A Little Less Trust. Sometimes in the night I feel it, near as my next breath, and yet untouchable. Silently the past comes stealing like the taste of some forbidden sweet. Dan Fogelberg, Ghosts. River flowed. There seemed hardly intervening steps from lying prone on the park bench to upright and moving fast. 1 minute she was still, the next a blur of grace and motion. River fisted one hand into Bob's hair, pulling his head back and using her weight to bear him downwards. With little leverage to control his suddenly bending spine, he was forced to let go of Kaylee to turn and deal with his attacker. He sacrificed some hair and managed to face River, only to receive a kick in his face for his troubles. She let go of him and glided back, as the other thugs, now ignoring the doctor and Kaylee as non-threats, closed in. The doctor dove forward, hand outstretched to catch the psychic tag as it fell. His fingers closed over it even as his other hand grabbed Kaylee by the collar of her shirt and dragged her back, out of the way of the abruptly furious melee. She stumbled against him, swearing in Chinese. "Sorry," he said in her ear, steadying her. "I think maybe we should leave River to it." There was no doubt the slight girl was holding her own. More than holding it, in fact. The doctor could not, offhand, recall ever seeing such efficient, ruthless, and above all graceful violence. Even Leela had never quite achieved this level of ease. "Shouldn't we do something?" asked Kaylee, anxiously. "Working on it." He upended the screwdriver over the tag in his palm and thumbed up the settings. "Which one, which one?" he muttered. "Come on, come on!" Despite the beating River was handing them, the thugs were not going down. River ducked and rolled and spun and danced and leapt between them, but they were not falling. The doctor strongly suspected that River might be pulling her punches so as not to actually kill them, but even so the thugs were proving mightily resistant. "They should be hitting the dirt!" Kaylee cried. "This ain't right! We gotta do something! Doctor!" "Almost got it!" A sonic screwdriver, even one as heavily tinkered with as his, would not do much against actual psionic energy. But these tags were, in their most basic components, essentially machines. As he told the woman back on Persephone, the screwdriver could play merry hell with complicated bits of machinery. If he could just work out the frequency. And, of course, provided the four men had similar tags to the Reavers, then they might just be in business. The tag buzzed in his palm. "Yes!" He thumbed up the power on the screwdriver and pointed at the tangled knot of River and thugs. The whine was ear-splitting, and out of the corner of his eye he saw Kaylee hastily clap her hands over her ears. The effect upon the thugs was rather more dramatic. Nearly as one, they dropped, writhing, to the torn-up grass. "How's that, Kaylee?" he said happily. "They hitting the dirt well enough for you now?" She stared, flabbergasted. He so loved being brilliant. No time to gloat, though. He wrapped the tag in his handkerchief, shoved it back into his pocket, and moved forward to the moaning Bob. Squatting down beside him, he pulled aside the prone man's shirt collar, fingers probing. "There has to be a... Aha! Thought so." He pulled away a tag very similar to the one in his pocket, wincing a little as tiny filaments slid out of the man's neck, leaving minute trails of blood. He'd hoped he wasn't doing any neurological damage, yanking it out like this. "What's that?" asked Kaylee, edging closer to see. "Collars," said River, darkly. "Something like that," the doctor agreed. "Check the others, will you?" He thumbed another setting on the screwdriver and held it over the tag. "Let's just disable these nasty little toys." He took each tag in turn as it was handed to him and used the screwdriver on them. It might have been easier to simply break the things in half, but it was such an inelegant solution, and anyway he wanted a closer look at them in the TARDIS lab. The man nicknamed Bob groaned again, his eyelids fluttering. The doctor peeled back first one, then the other, to check his eyes. "Bit concussed," he observed, shooting a stern look at River from under his eyelashes. She ignored him. "How are you feeling, old chum?" the doctor asked merrily. The other man winced, and he modified his tone somewhat. "Bit of a headache." He helped the man into a semi-sitting position. "What's your name?"
"Vegas. Alonzo Vegas."
The doctor's mouth stretched into a broad grin. "Alonzo? Is it really? That's brilliant!" Catching the look on the poor man's face, he swallowed any other remarks he might have made regarding the man's name. "Not the time for French puns. I can learn, yes?"
Never mind. Do you think you're all right?"
"Feel like I've been beaten," said Alonzo, wincing as his fingers probed.
The doctor glanced at River again and said, "Ah, well, some nasty blokes set on you. We scared them off. Doesn't seem to be too much damage done. What's the last thing you remember?"
Alonzo blinked. I was coming out of an interview. Got the job, actually, and just picked up my IDENT badge.
He glanced over at the three other men, still prone and almost semi-conscious.
Who are they?
Job? With whom?
Rainier Enterprises. I don't suppose you've got any painkillers on you. My head aches like a Juan Ho after New Year's.
That wouldn't be Carson, Rainier, would it?
Yeah, replied Alonzo, growing irritable.
What's it matter?
He glared suspiciously at the doctor, then the two girls.
Just who are you people, anyway? And who the hell are those guys?
He gestured again at the other men.
The doctor stood up, hauling Alonzo up with him and making a show of dusting him off. Doesn't matter. Call us, Good Samaritans, if you like. Now I think perhaps you'd best take yourself off home for a nice cuppa and some pain pills. Allons-y, Alonzo. He gave the man a little shove.
Alonzo, overwhelmed by the sudden pseudo-British briskness and the bad French pun, obeyed. The doctor allowed him to limp a few steps off and added,
"Oh, and Alonzo."
The man paused.
"What?"
"Take my advice. Don't accept that job with Rainier Enterprises."
"What? Why not?"
"Just don't. If things go as they usually do when let's just say that their stock options and employee benefits may not be worth much shortly. Now, off with you. Shoo."
When he had gone, still looking deeply suspicious, Kaylee said, "What do you mean, Doc, about Rainier?"
The doctor pulled out his handkerchief and wrapped up the new tags in it.
"Someone's producing these little horrors, and I'd lay a quid that Mr. Alonzo Vegas didn't get one slapped on him by a side-alley thug."
He glanced at the three other men, beginning to groan and stir, and admitted, "Well, maybe by those side-alley thugs, but I imagine they were operating under orders, so to speak."
"And Carson Rainier is the fellow who's got the alien we're after," Kaylee finished, her eyes narrowing. "You think there's something between the two of them? But why?"
"Why is a very broad question, Kaylee, love. Why do I think there's a connection between Rainier and these tags? Because these tags were almost certainly produced with technology alien to these parts. Rainier's the fellow who has an alien. Ergo, the connection is likely. Why are they doing this?"
The doctor shook his head.
"Can't give you a definite answer to that one, but I expect it's pretty much the usual. Power, control, and or world domination. Villains are sadly an imaginative lot. It's always the same old routine. Just once it'd be lovely to run into a bad guy who just wants, I don't know, the perfect cup of tea or something."
He sighed. "I suppose he wouldn't be a villain then. Oh well."
He brightened. "Now, I think it's time we went and had a closer look at Rainier Enterprises. Shall we go?"
Kaylee folded her arms.
"Not without talking to the cap'n, we ain't. And what, you planning just to walk in there or something?"
"Or something," the doctor agreed.
He held up Alonzo's wallet, which he had neatly picked from the man's pocket while helping him up earlier.
Kaylee stared. "You stole that from him?"
"Obviously. I may not be able to play spoons anymore, but by heaven, I'm still a good pickpocket."
He flipped open the wallet and pulled out the slim ident card with Rainier Enterprises, LTD, and Alonzo's name printed on it.
"I'm so clever sometimes."
River glided up next to him and eyed the card narrowly.
"It's dirty," she remarked.
"Possibly," agreed the doctor. "But I have a handy cleaner back on Serenity that should take care of any inconvenient traces of DNA embedding." He caught Kaylee's eye. "Which, of course, entails stopping to have a chat with Mal, naturally. I wouldn't dream of doing anything without the captain's permission," he added, insincerely.
Mal paced the length of his cabin. Exactly 3.5 strides if he made sure to go around the ladder, one hand fisted in his hair, the other tugging at a suspender. Three hills gnawed at him like a dog with a bone, but he wasn't any closer to figuring a solution than he had been while he started pacing an hour ago. He was used to feeling like things were out of his control, that the whole Goram-verse had him at a disadvantage. But this? There was something big here, he was sure of it. Something he'd only seen the tracks of, but not the form. And he was only too aware that a footprint did not look like a boot. Theories and ideas multiplied like bunnies, most of them with the Alliance tagged as VILLAIN in great big letters. And yet, pieces didn't fit.
He didn't have enough information. That was the Yedweda Buenche role of the problem. They knew next to nothing about what was really going on here, which was, he supposed, not unusual for he and his, but it went nowhere towards giving them even an option, let alone a solution. This feels like too many of those Goram missions during the war, when the brass wouldn't tell us grunts what the hell was going on, but still expected us to pull a miracle out of our collective ass. He had to do something. Pacing his little bunk like a cat with a knot in its tail was doing nothing but drive him crazy. He dearly wanted to hit something. Or someone. Preferably someone annoying, but Jane hadn't gotten back yet, and he wasn't sure he could come up with a good justification for hitting Simon. Especially not when the boy was being, for him, supportive. Probably he should go talk with Zoe and Inara, in the hope that the three of them could come up with something, but it still wouldn't magically produce any more intel. All they'd managed was an endless round of, "What do we do?" With a low growl of fury and frustration, Mal climbed up the ladder and out his cabin door. It was a design flaw, he felt, that the doors on the cabin's quarters weren't really made for slamming, being run on hydraulics and, therefore, capable of only a hissing sound. The captain was upset. In Mal's book of captain's rights, he ought to be able to spread it around and make everyone else equally unhappy. Except for Zoe and Inara, with Zoe being off-limits just now, and Inara. A while back he might have gone and picked a fight with her to let off steam, but lately it just didn't seem... Hell, he'd had no idea what was going on there. Well, no, that wasn't exactly true, but he didn't dare even think too hard about it. That way lay pain, and he had enough of that going on in his life, thank you so much. Mal realized he'd kept moving, that his feet, moving without any particular instructions from his brain, had taken him to Serenity's hold. He found himself standing in front of the weird blue box the doctor had brought on board. Police Public Call Box. There was a smaller sign on the door, instructing the reader to use the telephone to summon police in case of emergency. Telephone? That was an Earth that was the thing, if he remembered right, a bit like the comms they use now. He vaguely recalled seeing one somewhere, some item in an artifact collection or a museum somewhere. His ma had dragged him to one on Shadow once, though he didn't recall it having anything particularly interesting. Well, the doctor had mentioned it was a family heirloom, so probably it was an Earth that was artifact, and therefore extremely valuable. Mal distracted himself for a few moments, toying with the idea of waving Badger and offering to sell him a priceless antique instead of an alien. He sighed, a little wistfully. Then he frowned. Why hadn't he thought of this before? Not that he was seriously considering doing any such thing. After all, the man was a paying passenger. But surely Jane at least would have suggested it by now. Anyone could see that it was an Earth artifact. Mal's frown deepened. In fact, no one had even really mentioned the thing since it was brought on board. Almost as though it wasn't there. Mal blinked and focused on the blue box again. No, it was definitely there. He could see it. But even as he considered this, he found his eyes wandering past it once again. Like the box itself was sliding out of his line of sight. Which was downright crazy, that's what it was. Shaking his head as if it might stop his eyes playing tricks with his brain, Mal reached out to touch the thing. Maybe physical contact would help. His fingers brushed a blue panel, and he jerked his hand back. What the hell? He reached out, this time flattening his palm on the thing, the painted wood slick rough beneath his hand. It's warm. And even weirder, it seemed to hum slightly. A faint vibration he could feel in his bones, a steady, almost rhythmic pulse, like a heartbeat, like it's alive. He yanked his hand back again, his own heart racing a little. What was this? This was crazy thinking. It's just a wood box, wasn't it? And wood boxes weren't supposed to hum, were they? Okay, so he didn't know much about Earth that was artifacts, but surely this wasn't normal. Footsteps on the boarding ramp brought him around with a start. Kaylee, River, and the doctor, all three dusty and rather disheveled-looking. Mal's hand slid toward his gun as he took in Kaylee's pale face and the frightened look in her eyes, the grim inscrutability of River's features. The doctor's head was lowered, apparently deep in thought, his expression unreadable. "Kaylee," said Mal, "what's up?" He watched her make a visible effort to compose herself, to push away the lingering fear haunting her pretty face. "Cabin, She broke off, tugging at her coveralls with hands she tried not to let shake. The doctor interrupted, placing a hand on the girl's shoulder. "Someone seems to be very interested in our doings on Three Hills," he said in a low voice. His eyes narrowed at Mal. "You don't seem surprised." The other thruster had fired. Mal just hadn't expected it to be quite so quick. He blew out a breath. "Not so much," he agreed. He glanced at Kaylee and hesitated. Fighting always upset his mechanic something terrible, and he wasn't sure dropping the news about Three Hills' fate on her right at this moment was such a great idea. But no, that was an insult to Kaylee's courage and strength. Maybe she hated combat and brawling, and maybe she responded to it afterwards with tears, but that didn't make her weak, just gentle-hearted. In her own way, she was as strong as anyone else on his crew, and she deserved nothing but truth from him. "Just after you all left, we got away from Three Hills," he said. "Sent about a day after we broke Atmo." He watched Kaylee frown some, then saw her eyes grow large with horror as her imagination presented possibilities. "It wasn't good news, I take it," said the doctor. Mal shook his head and watched the other man's hand tighten on Kaylee's shoulder as her hands flew to her mouth. "Oh, Mal," she breathed. "It's not..." "Three Hills got hit by Reavers. Far as we can tell, no one survived." River's deep eyes, Mal noted, were not at all surprised. He half expected her to say something typically River cryptic, but instead she walked over to Kaylee, slipped an arm around the younger woman's shoulders, and steered her away. Kaylee went without protest, her face numb and shocked. River led her off toward her own quarters, making soft, comforting noises as they went. It was an unexpectedly normal gesture from River, and Mal found himself strangely touched by it. And it left him alone with the doctor. He fixed the other man with a stern eye. "You don't seem too surprised." The doctor sighed and ran a hand through his hair. "Not terribly," he admitted. "The fellows who, jumped us at the carnival had a definite no-witness aura about them." He turned his head away, but not before Mal spotted the flash of emotion. Rage? Sorrow? In his dark eyes. "You're certain no one survived at Three Hills?" "Pretty near." Mal cocked his head to the side, and heard the doctor hiss something under his breath he didn't catch. It might have been a profanity, but it wasn't in any language he recognized. "What I find mighty interesting is the fact that we got away of just about the same time someone comes looking for you about Three Hills. How is it they caught on so fast? It ain't like we advertised to anyone we were heading for Paquin." The doctor ignored this, apparently lost in rapt contemplation of a nearby bulkhead. "Captain Reynolds," he said at last. "I think it's time we had a little chat."
"Oh, you think?"
That piercing gaze swept back to him.
"Not about me," he said firmly. "Not just yet. Let us instead discuss the Reavers."
Mal folded his arms and glared. The doctor ignored this as well. "I want you to tell me about them." This startled Mal out of his glare. "What? What do you—"
"Let us pretend," interrupted the doctor, waving a hand, "just for a moment, that I know absolutely nothing about Reavers. Let's say I've spent the last 100 years living in a box, and only just came out. I want you to tell me about the Reavers, not the campfire tales and rumors and gossip I've seen on the Cortex, not the garbled reports of certain incidents. I want to know what you know of these creatures."
"Why?"
"Because I asked you to tell me."
There was an edge in that accented voice now, an edge Mal recognized only too well. It wasn't a request. It was an order. Mal wanted to shout at the man, to demand that he stop playing these Goram games, that he stopped acting like he was in rotten command. But it was a reasonable enough question, and there was an unspoken plea in the other man's eyes that belied the steely tone of command and put a temporary leash on Mal's anger. He sighed again. "Fine." He gestured toward a crate, and the doctor, with a magnificently insincere show of obedience, sat down and gazed at him attentively. "You ever hear of a world called Miranda?" he asked.
"Living in a box, remember?"
"Yeah, fine." Mal's hands fisted around his suspenders. "Don't matter much. Most folk, if you ask 'em, will say they ain't ever heard of the place in all their lives. The Alliance finished the terraforming project on Miranda about 15 years ago. Far as I can tell, it was something of a pet project,
a border planet they'd gone out of their way to make like a core planet. Cities, industries, and such, nearly all set up and just waiting for people to come in and make them run smooth. Bit of a different approach from the usual settling the folk down with the bare supplies and letting them scrape by best they can. They sent out adverts calling for settlers to come to Miranda. I suppose it was one hell of a campaign, because a whole lot of folks went. I don't recall it my own self, but I was a dumb 8-year-old too busy trying to convince my ma I was a real grown-up. Things must have gone smoothly for a couple of years. When we saw Miranda, it was pretty clear the cities had filled up good, and things had been moving right along. But that wasn't all there was to it. You see, Miranda was more than some poster world for the Alliance's new plans to bring civilization to the border worlds. Some fifth-pick-go, or several, more likely, had decided that they could make people better. Nal's mouth twisted on the words. See, Miranda was terraformed enough to settle, but it still ran air processors to boost the Atmo. And Alliance Brass, in their infinite wisdom, added a little something extra to them. Called it Pax. Some chemical cocktail of Paxilin hydrochlorate. He nodded as the doctor gave a small start of recognition. The idea was to make the folk on Miranda less aggressive. Make them peaceful. Easier to control. Only it didn't quite work out the way they planned. There were 30 million people on Miranda. And nearly all of them became peaceful. Oh yeah. They stopped fighting. Then they stopped moving, eating, and breathing. Nearly 30 million people just lay down and died, peaceful-like. Nal recognized his voice was getting louder, and he paused, fighting down the old fury. The images of Miranda, corpses everywhere, burned in his memory. But some of them didn't lay down and die. Some of them had a different reaction. Instead of becoming peaceful, they became so aggressive they stopped being human. Reavers, breathed the doctor. The space around Miranda is filled with them. They just hang there and send out raiding parties. Make other reavers by catching folk and forcing them to watch what they do to their friends and family. No reason, no rhyme, just hate and fury. Maybe because they remember what happened on Miranda. Maybe because they watched those they love just give up and die, poisoned by the air they breathe. Maybe because they can't feel any other way. I don't know. Don't much care, to be truthsome. Whatever they once were, they ain't human now. And the Alliance knew. They knew what had happened, and they covered it up. It was easy enough. By the time things on Miranda went to hell, the war had already started, and folk all over this verse were too busy fighting to pay attention to some out-of-the-way planet. There were vague reports at first of a terraforming incident. So sorry, terrible tragedy, blah blah. Thinking about it now, I vaguely recall hearing some such thing. But by then, I'd signed up with the Independents, and was too busy trying not to get my ass blown off. And in the chaos of war, it was easy to make Miranda disappear. Wiped out of all the records, never mentioned again. I don't know how many folk on Miranda had family off-planet, but I imagine that if you were to go digging, you'd find out that nearly all of them had disappeared or been killed in the war. Mal dragged a hand over his face. And no one would have remembered, save for the fact that one little girl saw it in the brains of those with the blood of Miranda on their hands. The secret burned her right up, but she survived and escaped and came onto my ship. River Tam, the doctor whispered. Yeah. Ma propped his shoulders against the stack of boxes. So there's your story, Doc. Reavers in a nutshell. There was a long silence. The doctor got to his feet, turned away from Mal, propping his hands on a tall crate. Head bowed, and frame hunched. Mal couldn't see the other man's face, but from the rigid set of his shoulders beneath the coat, he figured there weren't pleasant thoughts running through the man's head. He wondered if he ought to say something more, but held his tongue instead, waiting. "Humans," the doctor said finally, in a low, grating growl. Mal saw his hands clench on the top of the crate. "You never change!" He whipped around to face the captain again, his long coat flaring. Mal nearly recoiled at the naked fury on the other man's face, but caught himself just in time. All the same, there was an almost inhuman scope to the rage written in every line of the doctor's face and body that set Mal's spine crawling. His lips were drawn back in a snarl over clenched teeth, brown eyes blazing. "It's always the same. Always thinking you can treat evil like a disease or some quirk of the DNA to be fixed with a bit of genetic manipulation. Like there's some magic bullet or cure for it to make everything perfect. As if evil weren't a deliberate choice, a path walked with open eyes. It never changes." Mal found he had his hand on his gun. His back pressed hard against the boxes. Anger of his own chased away some of the strange fear. "Ain't exactly disagreeing with you, Doc," he snapped. "I lost two of my crew and a whole lot of blood for standing up and doing something about it, so don't you go blaming me." And then, his brain caught up with the rest of him, he added, "And what do you mean, humans? You excluding yourself from the rest of the race here?" The anger drained off the doctor's face. "I'm sorry," he said. "You're right. You aren't to blame. It's just..." He looked away again, a grim and old sadness settling over his face in place of rage. "I've seen it so many times," he whispered, so quietly Mal had to strain to catch the words. "And I'm tired of it." "It is something of a fundamental flaw in human nature," Mal agreed, "thinking you can force folk to behave." The doctor smiled a little, a spark of humor glittering in his eye. "I would lay odds that you, Captain Reynolds, are the sort that prefers to misbehave." He lifted his chin. "Well, so am I, which brings us to why I asked you about Reavers. This got something to do with the fellows who jumped you earlier?" The other man nodded. "They were interested in the tags, and even more intriguing, all four of them were being controlled by tags very similar to the ones we found on Three Hills."
"What?"
"My thoughts exactly. Makes the imagination conjure up all sorts of unpleasant ideas, doesn't it?" "Real unpleasant," Mal grunted. "Especially seeing as Zeke said the Reavers that attacked them were acting like they were under some kind of orders, which, so far as anyone has ever been able to tell, is one thing Reavers don't do." The doctor's eyebrows drew together. "Under orders?" Still unclear on what he meant by that, but I got no reason to disbelieve him. Mal rubbed his arms, suddenly feeling chilled. "Zeke was a soldier, though you wouldn't know it to look at him. He would have seen the difference. The idea of Reavers acting in a disciplined fashion, even while still acting like Reavers. That's the sort of thoughts that keep me up nights. Those three in the woods were bad enough, but if Zeke was right, then there's a whole Goram army out there. And it's worse than that, if non-Reavers are being controlled as well." The doctor rubbed his chin thoughtfully. "Do you think it's the Alliance?" Mal shrugged. "Seems probable. Why, what's your theory?" "Oh, I've got several dozen, really. Well, all right, maybe not quite that many." The doctor rubbed the back of his neck, tugging at his collar. "In fact, it's really just one, but it's a bit vague." "Yeah? And what is it?" The doctor flashed that goofy smile that made Mal seriously doubt the other man's sanity. "Aliens." Mal gave him a long, level look. "I know, no such thing. Funny thing is, Captain, can you really insist that you know everything there is to know about this universe?"
"Maybe not, but I ain't ever seen any aliens. You sure about that?"
The doctor's grin widened. "Anyway, it's a big universe, and this is only a few small systems in it."
"Maybe," Mal conceded, "though I'd expected we'd have seen some by this point."
"Fair point. I wonder why you haven't." The doctor's smile faded and his eyes went somewhere far off in thought.
"So you think it's aliens?" "Well, yes. As in someone not from around here. It usually is," he added in a mutter. "And you believe this? Why?"
"Because of the tags. Like I said in the woods, Captain, that's not technology you lot should have."
"How do you know? You privy to all the government's secret projects or something?"
The doctor waved this away. "Doesn't matter. Like I said, it's only a theory." He shoved both hands into his trouser pockets, his eyes sliding away from Mal's once again. "This just doesn't make sense," he said under his breath. "I'm not used to running around blind like this. I thought I'd been everywhere by this point. I wonder if it's another side effect of the war, shifting the web out of place." "And we're off to reader crazy talk," thought Mal. "Doctor," he said, then had to repeat himself as the man continued mumbling to himself. The doctor blinked at him. "Sorry, went a bit off there. Did you have any thought in your head about what might happen to Three Hills? That someone might maybe be looking to cover their tracks?"
"Do you think I did?"
Evasion. Mal felt a surge of anger, and his fists clenched.
"Mal!"
He turned to see Jane pelting up the ramp. The big merc's face was an unaccustomed mask of worry and upset.
"Jane?"
Jane came to a halt a few feet away, panting a bit. He'd obviously been moving fast from wherever he'd been.
"Zoe called me up on the comm. Is it true? What happened?"
"Yeah."
Jane's face hardened.
"Ain't right," he growled.
"And it's our fault, ain't it?" There was an unexpected sorrow in the man's eyes. Well, maybe not entirely unexpected. Since Miranda, Mal had discovered that Jane had the rudiments of a moral sense. It was all manner of shocking. "It's someone's fault," said Mal, and looked at the doctor. "And I aim to find out just whose." "I couldn't agree with you more, Captain," said the doctor gravely. "And I've got an idea of how we might go about discovering it." And Mal never realized, in the wake of their conversation, that the doctor's strange box had slid its way out of his head once more.